Check out my new book, Reach All Readers, at reachallreaders.com. When you pre-order, you'll get special access to my Science of Reading mini course. Learn more at reachallreaders.com. Hello, this is Anna Geiger from The Measured Mom, and in today's episode, I got to speak with the wonderful Nancy Hennessy, who has written The Reading Comprehension Blueprint and co-wrote The Reading Comprehension Blueprint Activity Book, and she really is an expert on all things reading comprehension, which is so helpful because, as we know, comprehension is so complex, it's hard to break down, and she really does that very well. So in today's episode, we narrow in on sentence comprehension, talking about specific ways you can help students understand sentences, and as Nancy Hennessy quotes Cheryl Scott in this episode, she says that sentences are the worker bees of the text. When we're trying to get students to understand text, we often have to narrow down to the sentence level, and this episode will help you do that. So let's get started. Welcome, Nancy.
Thanks so much. I love this opportunity. You're doing such good work.
Thank you. I'm so pleased that you joined me to talk about reading comprehension. But before we get into that, could you talk to us about your history in education and what brought you to what you're doing now?
Well, first and foremost, I'm a teacher. I began as a teacher of children and adolescents. And now, primarily, I work with adults, with other educators, learning together. I worked in public school for many, many years, everything from the classroom to central office, regular and special education. And along the way, I realized that when I was a special ed teacher in middle school, I didn't know how to teach those boys that were in my class how to read. And so I connected with what was then the Orton Dyslexia Society, which became the International Dyslexia Association. And I became the president at some point in time, along the way making many friends, learning so much from the researchers and other practitioners, ultimately becoming one of Wilson's lead trainers a number of years ago, and had some background in Norton-Gillingham as well. And along the way, certainly continuing to work with teachers, teach teachers, and ultimately connecting with Louisa Motes, and becoming one of the original group of national trainers. And then having the privilege of working with her on the second edition module that had to do with comprehension. And so that really launched my interest. Up until then, many people, I think, would describe me as a decoding queen. Because my interest and my passion for making certain that young people and adolescents learned how to read. But I began to realize how deep comprehension was, and leaving public school, retiring, began to really focus on comprehension. And I developed a full-day training, the blueprint, and as I worked with teachers, as I consulted with educators and schools, they kept asking me, where's your book? And I kept saying, book, I'm not writing a book. But eventually I did write a book. And so I've continued to work with educators. I've certainly developed workshop courses primarily focused on comprehension. And of course, most recently, I co-authored an activity guide to go along with the blueprint. I think first and foremost, I want people to know that I'm still a teacher, that I truly believe we all learn together and that we all need to continue learning. It is our work.
That's very interesting that you started out, like you said, the decoding queen with all of your Orton-Gillingham training and everything, but then you went off in a different path as a main focus, which is a blessing to teachers because there's a lot out there for us on decoding, but not as much on comprehension. Yeah. And I think, like what you said, it's so complex, and you've managed to distill it or, you know, summarize it in your blueprint. So can you walk us through what the blueprint is exactly?
Sure. All right. So stepping back and thinking about the science always informs what it is that we do. So what is it that we knew about comprehension? We could turn to several different models. We could turn to that wonderful visual metaphor, the reading rope. And as I began to dive more deeply into that, I realized that not only is comprehension complex, but we have to acknowledge all of the language processing skills that go into comprehension. So I began to think about a framework, and that's what the blueprint is. It's a framework. It's a master plan. It is not a unit organizer or a lesson plan. One can derive those from the blueprint. But it is a framework that reflects really those research models with a focus on language comprehension, the importance of developing oral language early on, and then thinking about how one goes about translating. So the blueprint provides a scaffold, a structure for educators. It begins by asking educators to think about what are their goals, what is the purpose, and it identifies the need for content goals. You know, if we think about what's the ultimate goal of comprehension, it is to learn. It is to gain knowledge. Right. It is to use that knowledge in our lives to participate fully. So thinking through what are the critical understandings, what's the knowledge that you want students to take away, and then what are the literacy goals that we need to put in place in order to accomplish that. So processes equal quality products, right? So thinking about vocabulary, sentence comprehension, knowledge, that includes text structure knowledge and background knowledge, and then the ability to work at these different levels of understanding, including inference. So the blueprint provides direction in terms of what are the critical contributors, how do you go about designing and delivering instruction, but it also provides educators with some sense of what are the questions they need to ask themselves, you know, in terms of each of those different components of the blueprint. So for instance, with vocabulary, what are the words we need to teach? You know, what should we intentionally on purpose teach? How do we go about doing that? What do we need to do in terms of developing independent word learning strategies and so on? So the questions that go along with those contributors really come right out of the literature as well. So it's very much based in the science and hopefully provides, you know, an opportunity for teachers to think through the curricula because it's curriculum agnostic, all right, the curricula, mm-hmm. the programs that they're using, and to be thinking about, you know, what is it that our students need? What does the curricula or the program provide? Where else do I need to supplement, enhance my instruction so that all of my students are able to read with meaning? Quite complex. I love what UCAT says about comprehension. It is not a single skill. It's not a strategy. It involves a broad range of skill and knowledge, and I think we have to keep that in mind. Yeah. So hopefully it's helpful.
When I think of your blueprint, what I love about it is that you focus on the content first, right? Not like many of us did in our balanced literacy days where we picked a strategy and that was the focus. So we would say, well, our goal is that our students learn to compare and contrast. Your goal might be something like, our goal is that students learn the difference between frogs and toads or whatever they're reading. And I what I like about the blueprint too, I think, is that it provides basically things for teachers to consider as they're about to teach a text. Because I think it is, I don't know, I mean, I don't remember learning very much about how to teach comprehension except for ask questions. And and the book really dives deep into things like syntax and things that we don't give a lot of thought to, because as good readers and comprehenders, we may not know what's going to trip our students up. So your book helps teachers figure that out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think one of the things we have to step back and think about, and certainly the RAND Reading Study Group kind of provided direction for us, is what is it that goes into the making of meaning, and then this ability to walk away with this overall understanding of what it is that you've read. So, you know, when the reader comes to text, they really have to be thinking about, you know, what are the ideas that the author has provided for us, you know, and the author does that initially through the use of vocabulary and syntax sentences. But beyond that, then how do those ideas link up? How do they connect with one another? So that cohesiveness that's so important. And then what's the background knowledge that we have to integrate? And I don't mean to say this in a sequential way, because this is really very much a recursive process, but what's the background knowledge, including our knowledge of text structure, that will allow for us to, you know, go deeper, to go beyond the surface of the text? And then what do we walk away with, you know? So all of that connects back to these different components of instruction, and knowing your students, knowing what your students need, what they're bringing to the text, and what the text demands is particularly important. Yeah.
And like you said, there's just so many things that go into it. There's text structure, there's vocabulary. I thought today we would zero in on sentence comprehension, because I think that's a tricky one for teachers to really look at a sentence and know, what about the sentence is tricky? So I thought we'd talk about some specific ways to build sentence comprehension and maybe we could start with maybe why it's important to break down individual sentence for students and why teachers mm-hmm. haven't maybe done this traditionally.
Well, I think that the program and curricula that perhaps we've used in the past has been very focused, as you said, on strategy. And we've not thought about all of these different levels of language processing that are necessary in order to make meaning of the text. One of the individuals that I've turned to in the past in terms of her work is Cheryl Scott. And she talks about the fact that, you know, if in fact we're not able to deal with the complex sentences that we find in academic text, and that begins with read alouds, all right? You know, if we can't deal with that, no amount of comprehension strategy is going to help us out. The sentences really are the worker bees of the text. And then Richard Zippoli points out for us the fact that we really don't attend to this in curricula or programs. So how can we expect our teachers, our educators, to be thinking about this? We have an emphasis on vocabulary and background knowledge, which is very, very important. But the reality is these things are all interconnected. They work, as the reading rope would tell us, they work in concert with one another. So, you know, thinking about, again, Cheryl Scott's words, the sentences are the worker bees of the text, all right? One by one, they add up to the gist, all right? So
that's very interesting.
Yeah, we have to be thinking about, you know, can the students not only pull out the meaning of the words, but can they understand how those words work together in order to convey an idea? And those idea units, we successively aggregate those as we read, and that's what allows us to walk away with an overall understanding. Yeah.
One of the activities that's becoming popular for helping kids learn about sentence structure is sentence anagrams, where you have the words all mixed up and they put them together. I think too often kids just get those and then they're just supposed to do the work without any guidance.
Yeah.
Can you give some tips for how to get students started with those and how to support them as they do them?
Yeah, well, I think even prior to working with the anagrams, if we can just back up a little bit.
Sure.
I think one of the things that has to happen is we need to begin to teach students how we build sentences. And that happens somewhat, I think, when we're teaching them about writing, all right? But when we teach them about, you know, the parts of speech, the phrases, the clauses, and so on, the building blocks of sentences, there tends to be a focus on form, what I would call form, their names, noun, you know, phrase, clause, dependent, and so on, instead of on function. What do they do in terms of meaning? So beginning first and foremost with teaching them that, you know, where's the who in the sentence? Oh, that's a noun. Where's the do? What's happening? That's a verb. Where's the which one, what kind? So explicitly teaching that and giving them opportunity, modeling that even through sorts and so on, through organizers, structured organizers. And then when you give them words on cards, scrambled sentences, you can say, all right, look for the do words, look for the happening words, all right, find the verbs, so you can make the connection then to the label, to the form, all right. Now go and see if you can't find the who words or the what words that connect to those do words, and any describers, which one, what kind, how many, where, when, how. So using questions that connect back, I think, allows for them to use anagrams. I think anagrams can be very powerful. The other thing I would say is I think sometimes when teachers begin to think about instruction, they think about this as separate from the text, all right? It needs to be from the text, all right?
Okay.
So again, you know, choosing sentences from the text to work with, I think that's particularly important. Sometimes we need to modify the sentences a little bit, all right, dependent upon where the students are at. I always talk about fidelity with flexibility here. But at the same time, I think it's very important not to make this an isolated activity. The integration, I think, with the current curricula, with the program, is particularly important. So some steps. Capitalization and punctuation, you know, look for that first. That's a good clue. Now look for your verbs. Now look for your words that connect, your who or your what, your nouns, your describers. And look for those words that link up, that connect up, you know, like your conjunctions, your prepositions. But to do that, they have to understand how those words actually convey meaning. You know, a sentence, in the words of really Louisa Moats, it's a linguistic frame in which these categories of words kind of slot in, and we have to understand how those words contribute to the meaning. But yeah, anagrams can be lots of fun, but there's some instruction that has to happen in order to use them meaningfully. Yeah.
Yeah, and when I think of teachers getting started with those, they might, like in the primary grades, they might be reading a text, and then afterwards they put the words of the anagram up and they work together with the class. I like the idea of starting with a verb versus the noun. I think that might be what we might think we should do, is start from the beginning of the sentence, yeah. but the nouns can appear in many places in the sentence, so that may not be the smart place to start, but we know that the verb kind of anchors it, so thanks for explaining that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about questioning. So you have talked about having like a sentence and then from a nonfiction, like maybe perhaps from something that you've read to the students. Yeah, fiction or nonfiction. And then you're looking at the sentence and you're asking questions about it. Could you walk us through what that would look like?
Sure. So if you took a sentence from, let's say you're working on a unit that has to do with personal identity. All right. And we're working with little ones, maybe in first grade. And we're reading Chrysanthemum, and we might have read that aloud to them, dependent upon where they are with their reading skill. We would be modeling for them, having them listen to the sentence. Here's a sentence from Chrysanthemum, because I pulled one, so we'd have an example. On the first day of school, Chrysanthemum wore her sunniest dress and her brightest smile. Now, if we've directly taught them about the who and the do words, all right, and the which one, what kind, how many, and when and where, we could go back and we could use phrasing, all right? So let's listen again to the sentence. On the first day of school, what question does that answer? What does that tell us about Chrysanthemum? Oh, that tells us when this happened, all right, on the first day of school. Who's this about? Who wore her sunniest dress? Oh, Chrysanthemum did. What did she wear? She wore her dress. What kind of a dress is it? And so on. And she also wore her brightest smile. What kind of smile was that, a brightest smile? So just working through a sentence, pulling a sentence that perhaps is a little longer, because as students work through the grades, but even beginning with read alouds, the sentences are complex. They're long. They may have phrases, clauses, embeddings within them. And we need to kind of parse them for the students, separate them out into these varied components. The other thing that I often think about as they move through the grades, all right, is using a structured organizer. So it looks a lot like a sentence frame. Yeah. It's got a column for the who, the what, column for the which one, what kind, how many, and so on. And we can give the students, as they're capable of reading, we can give them the words on cards. So an example might be something from the Founding Fathers, which, is expository text. It would be more like 6th, 7th grade. And we could give them varied words, and we could have them do the sorting. And the reality is, once they do this sorting, so here's a sentence, for instance, from the Founding Fathers. The Founding Fathers are a group of men who were key figures in initiating American independence from Britain and establishing American government. That's a pretty long sentence.
Yes.
And that's what begins to happen as they move through the grades. The sentences are more dense. There's more ideas. They're longer. Again, they have more embeddings. So even kind of pulling out words, having them sort words, put them into structured organizers, and even saying to them, can you make a sentence now from this orally and then perhaps writing, begins to allow for them to deconstruct these more complex sentences that they encounter. It begins early on, though. It has to start with those read alouds early on. As we're developing that word recognition capability with decodable texts, we also need to be reading to them these texts that are age and grade appropriate, and parsing and modeling for them how we can work our way through the text with questions. So, yeah.
Yeah, a nice thing about this activity too, taking the sentences apart, is it doesn't have to take very long, and this can just be part of your routine. Like after you read aloud, you pull out a sentence, and building up over the year, that's an incredible amount of experience they've had working with sentences. But I know, like what you said, when you see what kids have to read in third grade, like with my own kids, and then I see their 5th grade social studies book, it's a big leap.
It's unbelievable. So Cheryl Scott and then Richard Zippoli, they talk about, the fact that we've got these long sentences. We have sentences that sometimes the who is separated from the do, and we have the because of embeddings. Sometimes it's active versus passive voice. We have to be aware of all that. That's what our children are going to encounter if in fact they're going to be able to work with texts that go beyond decodable. And by the way, we can use decodable texts as a base for building mm-hmm. this understanding as well. So we can reinforce with our decodable as we're developing these language comprehension capabilities. I always talk about intentionally teaching and incidentally on purpose teaching, right? Mm-hmm. And so it begins early on, yeah.
So can you talk to us about another strategy in your workbook, picture prompted generation?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So the picture prompted generation, the examples in the activity book really come from my co-author, from Julia Salamone, who is currently still working in school. And so it has that connection to students that's so important. And she particularly likes using pictures from Library of Congress, National Archives, and so on, but always, always connect it back to what it is that you're reading, all right? Okay. So, you know, an example might be, I know one of the examples we have in the book is a picture of the pioneers moving westward, and so we would be reading about Westward Ho, for instance, mm-hmm. different texts, both narrative and expository text, but we'd be using a picture to begin to talk about, you know, the experience of and what one sees within the picture and then the construction of sentences. I think what's important is we're always thinking about not only understanding the sentences that we're reading, right, pulled from text, but we're also thinking about how we can compose sentences based on our own understanding. So it's this integration mm-hmm. of reading and writing. And pictures or visuals are a wonderful way of doing this. I think we also have an example of one for sentence generation, and it happens to be the Wright brothers. And of course, I live right here in Kitty Hawk, mm-hmm. North Carolina, so I'm very familiar with the Wright Brothers National Park. But again, it would be connected back to thinking about the text that we're reading, why they were pioneers, for instance, always connected back to a big idea, critical understandings. And then thinking about, can we use a picture of the plane taking flight? And perhaps we can provide a prompt then, a kernel sentence. And this is very frequently something that's done in writing, I think, in writing instruction, explicit writing instruction. And but the picture then helps to prompt both oral, start to talk about it orally, and then the written component. Yeah. So questioning, very important. Structured organizers, very important. Pictures, very important. There are a variety of strategies that we can use to help students parse the sentences. Yeah.
Yeah, and just that those pictures are so useful even in the primary grades, right? So like you said, the oral language is so important.
Oh, absolutely. I think we have another picture that has to do with puppies. And so sometimes our critical understanding might be revolving around animals, the treatment of animals, the characteristics mm-hmm. of animals, and so on. And so even just taking a look at these puppies as we read stories about puppies and generating some language around that. I can't stress enough this connection between oral and written language. I mean, we can't be forgetting about that. Yes, in the early grades, we're developing those word recognition skills. If we know the reading rope, we're developing the lower strands. But at the same time, we have to be focused on those upper strands as well. And then throughout the grades, giving students opportunity to have conversation about what it is that they're reading and then move to their writing. Yeah.
Yeah. So start with that oral sentence building and then move to writing when they're ready to do that.
Yeah.
One thing you talk a lot about and one thing I read a lot about when it comes to syntax and things are phrases and clauses.
Yeah.
And that's, I think a lot of teachers don't know the difference. Like I have to remind myself. So how does that come into teaching kids, and when do we start being explicit about phrases and clauses?
Yeah, well, I think we can begin to be explicit early on, even as we're doing read alouds. We can be talking about, you know, a phrase that describes a who or a what, you know, or a phrase that describes, you know, what's happening. So the little boy, that's a noun phrase, all right? Mm-hmm. Ran quickly, that's a verb phrase, and so. Again, focusing on function first, you know, what's that telling you about what's happening? Oh, he ran. How did he run? He ran quickly. So phrases have everything to do with a group of words that work well together, all right? They don't have both a who and a do. They have either one, all right? And I think that's important. But they answer the same questions, really, as parts of speech. And so that sort that I was talking about, even word cards, you can put phrases on word cards, and you can have students begin to do the sort. Or you can do that orally with them. So I think you can begin early on.
Sure.
You know, the thing is... we have scope and sequence for writing, you know, but we don't have scope and sequence for comprehension. And the reason is because the texts that we're reading don't follow a scope and sequence. And
right.
So, you know, oftentimes people will say to me, where's the scope and sequence for comprehension?
Right.
It isn't there. It isn't
yeah.
there. As much as possible, we should try to align what it is that students are reading, learning about in written expression as much as possible. But it doesn't always totally match up. So it may call for us stopping for a moment, I should say, and doing a little bit of pre-teaching and explicit teaching so that students are able to work their way through. I will say this, if I were thinking about a sequence in terms of sentences, I would start always with the parts of speech. How do those words convey function, move to phrases, and then clauses. And then, of course, clauses have both a who and a do, so we need to teach them about that. But there are varied types of clauses, and so, you know, we can start with, you know, it's independent, dependent, that type of language. But, you know, it gets a little tricky when you get into the upper grades, like a relative clause. Like that mm-hmm. founding fathers that I just read to you, who were key figures. All right, that's a mm-hmm. relative clause. So we have to keep thinking about what is it that's being introduced in written expression that we can connect to and what's not, and can we do some mini lessons then so our students are able to parse those sentences. Yeah.
So would you say the point of learning about phrases and clauses is to understand their function within a sentence?
Always, 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 because within a clause, you're going to find, for instance, you'll find a who and a do, all right, whether it's a subordinate clause or not, or dependent clause, whatever we want to call it, all right. What's really important, though, when we teach clauses, is we need to teach those signal words, and we need to directly teach the meaning of the signal words. And so that comes into play when you begin to talk about, you know, complex sentences. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, oftentimes, again, in written expression, we're teaching students about those complex sentences and what those conjunctions mean. But we need to carry that over into comprehension and remind our students that those are signal words. They're telling us something about the text. And of course, some of them are very specific to expository text. So, yeah.
Yeah. When I think about the phrases, and you said, you know, we can start very young, it might make sense when teachers are doing sentence anagrams with young kids to maybe have a noun phrase on a card and a verb
yes,
phrase on a card.
They absolutely could do that. That's a very good idea. They absolutely could do that. That would be a nice way to start for them. Yeah. Yeah.
So let's move into types of sentences and when and how to teach them.
Ah, okay. Well, again, if we begin to think about scope and sequence for written expression, we know we begin with simple sentences, all right? But that's not going to really be the case when we're reading, all right, academic texts. So, yes, we want students to understand, first of all, that simple sentences convey an idea, all right? But that gets complicated when we begin to talk about, well, how many who's are there and how many do's are
right.
there, all right? So I think we have to think about this in a systematic way and pull sentences again from our text and have some conversations about how many who's do you see here, how many do's do you see here, how many what's,
okay.
right? And then thinking through and teaching them that, again, when we think about complex sentences, we're going to have one thing depends on the other, all right? And what's the word that signals that? And what kind of relationship is it signaling? Is it signaling time? Is it signaling, and of course, is it signaling that there's something connected, you know, additive? That's the simplest one. Time is not so difficult, but when you get into because or although, that becomes more difficult. And that is somewhat developmental and sequential, and we should understand that about our students, even though we may find those types of signal words early on in even read alouds, right? And then, of course, compound sentences conveying, again, how many ideas are you looking for here, All right, and you can separate them out. They're independent of one another. So those are sort of key things to be thinking about, so they understand the logical relationships that occur within the ideas in those types of sentences. Yeah. And again, it's not so important to me that you teach them it's a simple compound complex sentence. It's more about, mm-hmm. you know, how many ideas are we looking for and how do the ideas relate to one another?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think you talked about signal words, and I think one of the great ways to work on recognizing and understanding how signal words connect part of the sentence is through sentence combining and expansion, which I think are getting a lot of attention these days. Can you talk about those?
Yes. Well, certainly, you know, when we think about sentence combining, there is a scope and sequence for that. It's Bruce Sadler's work, and he gives us a very nice sequence, and he begins by saying, think about combining adjectives and adverbs, okay. for instance. That's the very first thing he talks about. So I often think about, can we pull sentences from, all right, can we pull sentences from the text? We can modify them a little bit. So, for instance, if one were reading Tuck Everlasting, a lot of fourth, fifth graders read that. We know one of the characters is Winnie. And we know that Winnie felt afraid and she felt disheartened, but those are represented in different sentences in the text. How would one combine that? Oh, Winnie mm-hmm. felt afraid and disheartened, all right? So we're using that little combining word, that word that signals combination or additive. But then, of course, we can look at some of our other texts, particularly expository text, and there will be other types of signal words that we see there that will allow for us combining. So when one looks at his scope and sequence, you begin to see combining compound subjects, predicates, and so on. The other mm-hmm. thing about those signal words, and this is kind of interesting, is they're also cohesive devices. So what do I mean mm-hmm. by that? Okay, well, one of the ways that authors combine, okay, ideas or integrate ideas within sentences or between sentences is by using these what are called cohesive devices. They fall into two categories, all right? One is conjunctions and sometimes prepositions, right? So it's the tying up of ideas. So, you know, if we say something like when this occurred, well, when is a signal that we've got some time going on here and it's going to connect up with the rest of the sentence. Well, here's one. When the grasshopper found itself dying of hunger, it saw the ants distributing, and it goes on. So that's obviously from a fable, all right? And what it's signaling to us is there's a connection here between when the ants were distributing, all right, and what happened when the grasshopper noticed this, all right? So that's a tie-up. The other type of a cohesive, making things coherent, organized, hanging together, would be what we call cohesive ties. And the most popular one among that would be pronouns. So, again, when the grasshopper found itself dying of hunger, it saw. Who's it? Oh, it's the grasshopper, all right? And we can find lots of examples of that. We also use synonyms and substitutions. So if we went to the founding fathers, are a group of men. Who's a group of men? Oh, yeah, it's the founding fathers. That's something that's very difficult for struggling readers, by the way. Some readers that are more proficient get that. Struggling readers usually don't. Yeah, we need to directly teach that, explicitly teach. Yeah.
And a good way I've seen to do that is where you have a text that you're reading, a complex text you're reading with the class, and you have yours displayed so that everyone can see it, and you're identifying those cohesive ties and then having them circle and draw back to the word or phrase that it's connected to.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I've seen teachers actually do that, taking varied text, whether it be something that's narrative, expository, newspaper article, and so on. So it's that coding. Oftentimes, I'll talk with teachers about coding. You can underline certain things, you can circle other things, and so on. Yeah, that needs to be directly, explicitly, in a systematic way taught. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you've really helped us narrow in on sentence comprehension, which is such a, I think, a hard thing to wrap your brain around. So thank you for all those examples. Those were super helpful.
Yeah.
And just an encouragement to anyone that's listening to make sure they check out your book if they haven't already, The Reading Comprehension Blueprint, which talks about everything reading comprehension, but also sentence comprehension. And then your activity book, which was you co-authored and recently, very recently published, which mm-hmm. gives really specific examples for teaching these skills across the grades. So I highly recommend both.
Oh, thank you so much. I greatly appreciated the opportunity to talk with you. I love talking about sentence comprehension.
I can tell. Well, thank you so much. And people can also find you. I'll be sure to link to as many workshops as I can find on YouTube. But I know there's a lot that you've given that, mm-hmm. that people can check out and learn more. And there's other podcasts you've spoken on as well. So
all right.
Thanks for all you do for teachers.
Okay. Well, thank you for all that you and your colleagues are doing as well. All right.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
You can find the show notes for today's episode at themeasuredmom.com/episode163. Talk to you next time.
That's all for this episode of Triple R Teaching. For more educational resources, visit Anna at her home base, themeasuredmom.com, and join our teaching community. We look forward to helping you reflect, refine, and recharge on the next episode of Triple R Teaching.